Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the July 2024 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by finishing the short remainder of Radio 101 by Ken Reitz, KS4CR. Zinwell Next Gen TV Set Top Box. DRM and OTA TV with Next Gen TV. As many have discovered, some Next Gen TV channels in some markets are locked with a Digital Rights Management DRM feature that's intended to deter illegal copying and distribution of OTA TV content. This has led to a certain amount of confusion among consumers who found that some next-gen TV boxes would not receive the locked ATSC 3.0 channels unless the set was connected to the Internet. Since there is only one unlocked ATSC 3.0 channel in my area, I was not able to test this. However, a review from May 13th in TechHive.com found that the Zinwell ZAT600B decoder had no trouble receiving DRM-locked channels in the reviewer's area without being connected to the Internet. Let me know what your experience is with ATSC 3.0 reception where you live. Ken Reitz's email is ks4zr1@gmail.com. And now a feature article, 100 Years of Radio, KFRB in the Rialto Theater of Beeville, Texas, by Ken Reitz, KS4CR. In 1924, there were just over 3,000 citizens in Beeville, Texas, a South Texas town in Bee County, near the Gulf of Mexico. Among those were Henry and Sidney Hall, two brothers from a prosperous Bee County family, who were issued a license in December of that year for a 250-watt radio station in Beeville for 1,210 kilohertz under the call sign KFRB. 2 years earlier, the brothers had spent $25,000, almost $500,000 in today's currency, to build a theater in Beeville called the Rialto, which would become the flagship for a 22-theater chain throughout South Texas owned by the Hall family. There were dozens of unaffiliated Rialto theaters across the U.S. from at least 1916, some of which still survive. In 1922, the first film to show at the Beeville Rialto was produced in 1921 by United Artists, a black-and-white silent swashbuckler, The Three Musketeers, starring Douglas Fairbanks. According to Texas historical markers, admission was 25 cents for adults and 10 cents for children. On opening night, the management hired an orchestra to accompany the silent movie, since the $10,000 pipe organ had not yet arrived. More than 1,300 tickets were sold the first night for two showings. Almost half the town would show up for the first night. Radio craze hits Beeville. The radio craze sweeping America at the time encouraged the two to start their own radio station to promote the theater, hence the license application. The station's 250-watt transmitter was on the second floor of the theater with the antenna on the roof, as was the fashion of the time. According to the University of North Texas Library's website, local and neighboring towns' talent entertained listeners as far away as Oklahoma City. Months later, interest died, and the station ended its broadcasting. It's entirely possible that the success of the Rialto made broadcasting as a promotional tool unnecessary. Regardless, Henry Williams Hall Sr. was the brother who caught radio fever and was responsible for KFRB. Even after the demise of the commercial radio station, there were reports that Henry continued radio activities as an amateur operator. In fact, he appears in the 1927 Department of Commerce list of amateur operators under the call sign of 5WE, authorized to operate at 1 kilowatt, considered a big gun in those days. In 1928, his call was changed to W5WE. 2 years later, Henry Sr. would have a son, Henry W. Hall Jr., to whom the elder Henry would pass the family radio fever. According to the obituary for Henry Hall Jr., which appeared in the February 8, 2007 edition of the Kerrville, Texas Daily Times, he was a longtime owner of a motion picture theater chain in South Texas and a Beeville civic leader. The obituary concludes, noting that Henry Jr., K5FPJ, was a life member of the American Radio Relay League that promotes the hobby of amateur radio. The deceased's father also was an active amateur radio operator who was a pioneer in the field, who transmitted from the first radio station in Beeville in the early teens and 1920s, before there was a federal licensing bureau. The story notes that Henry Jr.'s wife and their son were also licensed hams. The KFRB call sign now belongs to a Bakersfield, California FM station. Radio continued in Beeville, though without a connection to the Hall family. According to FCC records, KIBL in Beeville was first licensed in 1949 for 1,490 kHz at 250 watts and is currently authorized for 1 kilowatt unlimited broadcast time using a non-directional antenna. Today, KIBL is one of 11 AM and FM radio stations in South Texas under the No Bull Radio Network banner. As for the Rialto, a fire destroyed the interior of the theater in 1935, which was soon restored. As with so many small theaters across the U.S. in the 1970s and 80s, the theater had fallen into disuse. However, it has since been restored to its original Art Moderne style, thanks to the efforts of the Hall Rialto Preservation Association, formed in 1990. The Rialto Theater was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 2001. Beeville today is 62% Hispanic or Latino in population, and hopes the theater will provide a place for bilingual theater and other cultural programs. And now, digitally speaking, by Corey G.B. Sickles, WA3UVV, WA3UVV @gmail.com, A Summer's Potpourri. This month, we are going to delve into a potpourri of topics, as there are several items that have either been on my mind or have recently come to light. All have some connection to digital communications. Our first topic is EVE. More to the point, EVE25. Have you heard of it? As EME stands for Earth, Moon, Earth, more commonly known as Moon Bounce, EVE refers to Earth, Venus, Earth. March 25th, 2025 will mark the closest distance between our planet and the second one in our solar system for some time to come. There is an effort afoot to attempt communications via amateur radio by bouncing signals off Venus during the closest weekend. Large dishes at several radio astronomy sites are sure to be engaged. Digital communications modes such as Q65 will be used to do this, along with some other possible candidates. There are also some hams with very impressive EME setups that may be contenders for successful contacts, especially with the big guns. One of those is Interdisciplinary Science and Engineering Complex, ISEC, at Northeastern University in Boston. ISEC's effort, being led by Martin Flynn, W2CDL, will utilize their relatively new compact radio telescope, which normally operates at 21 centimeters, just above our 23-centimeter band. There are certainly larger radio telescope facilities around the world. Those participating should be well equipped for reception, but some transmitting gear is going to need to be added to enable two-way communications. If you do not have a radio telescope in your own backyard, there is still hope for setting up a modest yet successful receive-only RO station, with some decent directional antennas and preamplifiers, either with a 23-centimeter transceiver or transverter. Amateur radio EME was once the domain of hams who had serious investments in transverters, amplifiers, multi-antenna arrays, and low-noise amplifiers that were often cooled down with liquid nitrogen to enhance signal-to-noise levels. A ham who liked to experiment with such things when I was just starting out used to house his preamplifiers in the freezer section of a spare refrigerator. He would pick up some dry ice locally and pack that on top of the preamps. It might have been crude by professional standards, but it worked well and was much more convenient and less expensive than getting a delivery of liquid nitrogen. By comparison, for anyone interested, the temperature of dry ice is negative 109 degrees Fahrenheit, negative 78 degrees Celsius, and liquid nitrogen comes in at negative 320 degrees Fahrenheit, or negative 196 degrees Celsius, so there is a notable difference. Significant also is that many standard electronic components are rated only down to negative 40, the converging point on the Fahrenheit and Celsius scales. So keep in mind that sometimes going to further extremes may not deliver the results you desire. This is also one of the reasons why companies produce components with military or space ratings. Today, 100 watts or so, with a long multi-element Yagi, linear, circular, or paired for dual polarization, can deliver a reasonable effective radiated power, ERP, that, modulated with today's very weak signal-optimized digital modes, is more than enough to get to the moon and back. Receiving with the same antenna setup and some good quality low-noise amplifier, LNA, assistance will adequately recover such signals. So, a multimode rig, moderate amplifier, and good antenna system take care of your uplink, while a high-gain, low-noise LNA ensures good reception. That requires a mere fraction of the out-of-pocket costs, adjusted for inflation, associated with the same effort of some decades ago. At that time, it was mostly CW, although you can still get desired results with that mode as well. After all, technology has improved over the years. As with anything involving VHF+, where you want to optimize your station's performance, the use of high-quality, low-loss feed line and connectors, other than PL259-SO239 combinations, is strongly recommended. The round trip for signals to and from the moon is approximately 3 seconds. When Venus is at its closest point next year, it will require almost 14 and a half minutes for a signal from Earth to reach it, then that period again for the return. One exchange per hour may not sound very exciting, and certainly is not going to encourage any rag-chew QSOs. But hearing your signal return from another planet, and to exchange call signs and signal reports with another ham, would be cause for celebration for many of us. The thought of doing that with EME was a strong motivator for my wife to get her amateur radio license. It was one of the takeaways from a talk that Joe Taylor, K1JT, gave at a club meeting she attended. Dr. Taylor is the creator and co-creator of many of the digital modes we now use every day, such as FT8, JT65, and so on. While he is very well versed on a number of topics, he also possesses the very valuable skill of being able to talk about technical subjects in simple terms, without sounding as though he is talking down to someone. All public speakers and presenters should have this skill, but far too many do not. Back to EME. I have finally amassed everything I wanted to get together for my wife to finally be able to accomplish what she set out to do when studying for her ticket. I hope she gets as much enjoyment out of doing it as I will watching her. Some mention of Q65 is in order, as it is a mode designed to give you a significant edge over poor propagation paths in situations where the Doppler effect is greater than just a few hertz. Both of these considerations are valid for EME and certainly EVE. Closer to home, Q65 is also effective with ionospheric scatter, troposcatter, and rain scatter. Many 10 GHz enthusiasts have used the latter. Q65 incorporates 65 tones for frequency shift keying. Various redundancies are used, along with robust forward error correction FEC algorithms. There are also submodes, the choice of which depends on what frequency range you are using, to provide further optimization. Q65 is part of the WSJTX software suite, which it would seem most hams have, which includes FT8. If you have never tried EME, but have the elements of a good ground station, give it a try, especially when there is a contest, to see if you can score some DX at a 500,000 miles of round-trip distance. That denotes some serious DX. As we get closer to EVE25, I will have some additional information and details. If you miss this next opportunity to try at least an RO effort, the one following it will occur approximately 584 days later. Recently, I wrote an article about the fun you can have on 6 meters and the opportunities for DX that the band represents for a technician and higher license class hams. Digital mode FT8 is as popular as ever there, and recently it seems that there is more and more activity. As always, tuning into beacons can give you an idea of where to point your beam if you have one. At some recent hamfests in my area, I noticed more than a few low-cost options in 6-meter SSB CW rigs, from 100-watt class radios down to QRP portables, such as the ICOM IC502. I was tempted to pick up the 502, but as I took a mental inventory of what I already own, and concluded that I presently have 7 transceivers capable of operation on the band, 4 portables among them, I opted to leave that particular treasure for someone else to enjoy. If you own a Yaesu FT991A, then you may be interested to know that 51.5 MHz appears to have become the new watering hole for system fusion activity. In a similar way, the 29.25 MHz is on the 10-meter band. Enable group mode on your radio and allow it to beacon out. Other group mode enabled rigs will respond upon hearing yours, or yours may respond to others as band conditions allow. This is just one more reason to give 6 meters a try. Back to the hamfest. I did find a Heathkit AT1 transmitter, which I believe was the company's first transmitter kit. It was so clean and so nicely priced that I just could not resist. As it uses a 6AG7 tube for the oscillator and a 6L6 as the final, I can use the smaller HC49 crystals mounted in FT243 blanks without too much worry about pushing too much current through them. I need to open it up and check out the condition of capacitors and other components. But if all goes well, I should be able to entice it to produce a power level near 20 watts out when I put it on the air. This transmitter is so old that it does not have a 15-meter position on the band switch, as that band was not initially released to us until 1952, then fully in 1953. I plan to pair it with a set of ARC5 receivers I have, or the Hallicrafter's Sky Buddy that my wife bought me a few years ago. It will make a nice minimal CW station, as I enjoy our oldest digital mode, mostly on 80 meters and 40 meters. Eventually, I will see if I can get it to tune up acceptably on 30 meters. I believe that the tuning circuit range will be broad enough to work without having to perform any modifications. If you are a ham, You would need to have been living in a Cold War fallout shelter to not know that the American Radio Relay League, ARRL, was the target of a cybersecurity attack just before Hamvention. It was a serious, damaging, and extensive cyber attack, affecting numerous services and aspects of their operations. Cyber attacks come in essentially two forms: information technology, IT, and operational technology, OT. With an IT attack, bad actors may collect, encrypt for a ransom, or simply erase your data. With an OT attack, those same people may disrupt your organization by turning off the air conditioning in your computer server room, causing overheating and subsequent failure. The League lost a service known as Logbook of the World, LOTW. The ability of the Volunteer Examiner Coordinator, VEC, to submit a license grant and upgrade requests to the FCC, their entire telephone system, which apparently is TCP/IP-based, and more. It was several weeks before you could contact anyone via email or telephone. A VE exam package I had mailed just before this happened took more than a month to be submitted. While other systems and services are back up and running, LOTW was still dead in the water at the time I typed this. While the League has stated that no user data or personal member data was compromised, they have also not been very forthcoming about what happened, why their presumed security measures did not prevent this from happening, and what measures are being instituted to prevent this from happening again. Presumably, they have sufficient backups to restore the LOTW system, but the lack of transparency has many concerned. In fact, it seems to be more of a member complaint than anything else. It is all too easy to sit back and judge what they did and did not do prior to and during the attack. But it is more constructive to take a look inward and ask ourselves what we are doing to protect our own data residing on our computer systems. Anything that touches the internet is vulnerable in some way. Anytime you open an email from someone you do not know can make you additionally vulnerable. Back in the days when I owned a computer consulting and field service business, I would occasionally get calls from clients who had system crashes, sometimes resulting in a loss of data. One of my first questions to them was, "How current is your most recent backup?" The amount of dead air between the end of that question and the first word of their reply often told me what I needed to know. Either they had not performed a backup in some time, or they had not done it at all, since the time they had paid us to install a tape drive and show them how to use it. I have often been reminded of a phrase I learned when I was younger: "You play in the street, you are going to get hit." If you do not have a backup regimen with your at-risk systems, then you are playing in the street, and, well, you know the rest. While backups on home and small business computer systems have taken different forms over the years, from floppy disks to tape drives to read-write DVD drives to external USB drives to mirroring network drives, the important thing is not the technology, but that you actually use the technology. Backups can be summarized as two types: global, full, complete backups, or incremental backups. With the first, you make a copy or copies of everything. This requires more time, but it is the easiest to restore from. Incremental backups only copy the files that have changed or been created since the last full backup. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.